Okay, I think we have almost everyone here. I think we're waiting on Nate, but let's go ahead and get started. I don't imagine this is going to be a very long call today, mainly because we've got a lot of people out on vacation and a lot of other people are focusing on the W3C blog post, which we'll get to later on in the agenda. Here's our agenda here. On the agenda today is a review of recruiting. Then going over very briefly roadmap, use cases, and capabilities. Those are the three documents that we have kind of yet to do. We're adding one agenda item, which is an introduction by Annie Jensen from Parchment. Is there anything else folks would like to discuss today? Anything else to add to the agenda? Okay, if not, we will go ahead and jump into the recruiting. Actually, you know what? No, let's do introduction to Annie. Okay, Annie, go ahead.
Okay, I'm Annie. I am a product manager at Parchment. For those of you who don't know, Parchment is right now we're primarily an e-transcript company, and we have a consumer website called Parchment.com, and then our B2B side, which is called Parchment. We have a lot of high schools and universities using our e-transcript sending solution, and I manage the Parchment, the consumer side of things, so the website where high school and college students can log on and order their transcripts. And right now we're in the process of adding other credential types. We actually just partnered with CLA, so students can order their or claim their CLA plus credentials. And then we're also going to be offering, schools will be offering like diplomas, certifications, so other types of academic credentials.
Great. Thank you, Annie. Welcome to the group.
Thanks.
A couple of questions for you. Are you joining the group long term, or are you just checking in? And the other question is, what are you hoping to get out of the group over the next couple of meetings?
I am joining the group long term, and we were just going through like all of our product managers are kind of joining community groups so that we can get an idea of what's going on in the credential landscape. And I, as working on the consumer side, I just want to make sure that I'm in the loop with everything that's going on, I guess, like in the credentialing world, and what's coming up.
Okay, great. Awesome. Okay, any other questions for Annie before we move on? Okay, if not, let's go ahead and cover recruiting. Annie, we've got a number of documents, and we can point you to those out of band. So if you want to send me an email afterwards, I can point you to all the documents that we have right now so you can kind of bring yourself up to speed.
Okay.
All right, recruiting. Here is, and again, this is a private list. Please do not share or circulate it, but current status of recruiting. We have, we're holding steady at around 39 organizations that have said that they are committed to the credentials work. So they would probably highly likely to join the credentials work if an official group is created, W3C. It has slowed down, so we need to do another round of pings to make sure that people have seen the questionnaire and they fill it out. Parchment is not on this list, Annie, so we can chat a bit about if you guys would want to support the work here and would join an official activity if it was started, so we can have that discussion offline as well.
Arrangement.
Okay, great. Let's see. So yeah, we need to ping a couple more groups and get, we want to get more folks saying that they're going to join the work. The other thing that is happening right now, Nate, is that you? We just joined 908 area code. Hey, Eric. The other thing that is currently going on is this case that we're making to W3C that credentials are worth doing. Let me find those blog posts. The first two blog posts are done. Credentials retrospective. So we've got, yeah, go ahead and scribe this longly, but we won't link to the blog posts. Here's the first blog post. So this is credentials via W3C. This is not going to be in the minutes. The link is not going to be shared in the minutes. And here's the second one, which is a bunch of arguments. Basically, it's a bunch of background material that strengthens the arguments being made in the first blog post. So this is credentials retrospective. I have circulated this out to a number of participants in the group that are going to be on the call with the World Wide Web Consortium in the next couple of weeks to convince the management there that this is something worth standardizing at W3C. If you have a chance, please read over those blog posts and send me feedback on it so I can make changes and updates to it. Initial response from W3C staff is very positive. They have been appreciative of all of the background research that went into those two posts. Okay, I think that's an update on that's the update on recruiting. Eric, since you joined in a bit late, we definitely want to do another round of contacts with the. I think we've got another 60 organizations that haven't responded yet, so we want to ping them as well. And John Tibbetts, we may want to ask you to reach out to folks that you think should have responded but haven't yet. Same thing with you, Matt Stone. Okay, so that'll be next week. We might, I might ping you guys at the end of this week and try to come up with a plan on getting more people signed up.
Manu, I'm going to be at the quarterly meeting next. I'm going to see all these people all next week, and I can work on that. It'll be much more compelling if I'm doing face-to-face stuff. Is that timely enough for you?
Yes, please. That would be
Okay.
fantastic.
Yeah, we'll
Yeah,
do that.
so if you could lean on some of them to fill out that questionnaire, that would be fantastic. And then just so that everyone has the questionnaire, this is the form that we're asking organizations to fill out. Yeah, so thank you, John. That would be super helpful. Okay, anything else? Any other updates on recruiting? Any parties that have been contacted lately? There's one very large organization that I'm speaking with right now. Huge, huge multinational, multi-billion-dollar-a-year tech company. that has recently said that they'd be very interested in joining the work here. So I've got a call with them early next week to see if I can pull them into the light and announce what their name is. I can't mention who they are yet.
It's Alphabet, isn't it?
How'd you know? I will stay silent. Okay. Anything else on recruiting? All right. Next up are the roadmap use cases and capabilities documents. Has anyone had a chance to work on these documents over the past week?
I have not. I was planning on doing some this week.
Okay. And then which can you remind me again, Brian, which one you have?
I was going to work on the use case document.
Okay, great. Fantastic. Let's sync up before you do work on that. Eric has been, as he's putting in IRC, he's been working on the vocabulary, the glossary terminology that we're using. I need to resync those. 609 area code, who's that? Just joined, 609 area code.
Richard.
Hey, Richard. Okay, and then the last document, the capabilities. The capabilities kind of sprang out of the detailed blog post, the credentials retrospective. So one of the things that the W3C, some of the staff asked for was a list of capabilities that a credential system, an open credentialing system, should have. Because we had not written, we hadn't written that list down yet, we were able to chat with a couple of you offline and come up with that list. So the credentials retrospective post that's above in IRC has a list of goals for an open credentialing ecosystem. And then below that, it has a set of capabilities that we list for that open credentialing ecosystem. And there are things like, escaping me now, but there are things like using an extensible data model, ensuring that multiple market verticals can create their own credentials without having to do it in some kind of centralized place like W3C or ITF, web-based PKI and digital signatures. These are all capabilities that the system that at least we've been working on, the community group, have, and we use those to rank other technologies like SAML and Shibboleth and OpenID Connect and OAuth and Mozilla Persona and all those other things. The deep dive that we did in those blog posts, we used the capabilities and tried to see if the current state of the art matches those capabilities or not. Quite a bit of work has gone into that, and I think that is going to be the first very, very rough draft of the capabilities document, is those things split out by area. So we talked about, there are four big groups in the capabilities document right now, and that has to do with issuing a credential, storing a credential, kind of managing the life cycle of that credential, both from the issuer perspective and the recipient perspective, and then the consumption of the credential by a credential consumer. So those are the four broad capability groupings, and we've got features underneath that we can rip out in the blog post. Okay, I think that's it for the documents. Does anybody have anything else for the call this week? It's going to be a pretty short call.
I have one suggestion. This is John, about the blogs. I found the blog on the mild successes and dramatic failures a very compelling document. I think it works really well, covered a lot of ground. I'm familiar with a couple of these stacks, but not others, so it helped me get a view of the landscape. But I think what's missing, and it shouldn't be in this document. This document is a perspective of what's out there. If there were a follow-on document, or it might be very short, that says, and here's how the technologies that we're working on in this group, how it would address each of, and not just sort of a rating of how it would do on this list, but a sentence or a phrase or two about, you know, what parts of the technology address the category of, say, privacy enhanced sharing and so forth.
Yes. I absolutely agree. Let me give you some background on why the blog post is structured in the way it is. So when I talked to the W3C staff members, they said that the best way to approach this, because it's such a charged topic and area, is to basically say, listen, the problem exists, and you know, basically go through stats and talk about the problem, billions of dollars in damages because credentials are not portable, because each company sets up their own credentialing ecosystem, all that kind of stuff. Go into all of the things that people are scared about when you talk about credentials, you know, lack of privacy or loss of privacy and anonymity on the web. The problem has been solved before. Why are we talking? We're still talking about this, things of that nature. And then talk about, you know, all of the things that have been tried before and why they are not an acceptable solution to it. And then the W3C staff said, leave it there. Don't talk about the solution that the credentials group has created yet, because we need to get everybody on board that there is a problem and there are companies that want to standardize solutions around it, and they have real products that need this stuff. The conversation that comes after, like, you know, here are all the problems, this is what we need for a good ecosystem, these are the capabilities we need. After everyone's kind of on the same page on that kind of basic philosophy of what we're trying to do, then we can talk about how, you know, the credential proposal that we have on the table, at least in the community group, addresses all of those capabilities. And John, I mean, you know, the thing's designed so that we should be good to go on every single one of those capabilities. And I absolutely agree with you that there needs to be a blog post on that. The reason it's not in that same list was because the W3C staff thought that it could become a point of people would fixate on it and argue that it's not the right solution, and that would detract us from actually having a conversation around just the high level vision and capabilities. So yes, absolutely, I will try and write that blog post. I'm a bit strained for time, but we absolutely should write that blog post so that, you know, folks like you can take that and show it to people as a proposed solution. Richard, you wanted to chat about recruiting and Accenture?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I was a little late. I was in another meeting. I did finally got a phone call. Gary Driscoll from ETS, and I had a talk with some Accenture people. Laid out the business case for them as to why they should be involved. They're going to run it up the pole in the company and see if they're interested in joining in general, and then whether they would be specifically interested in helping out on the credentials stuff. They were a little worried about the time commitment. I told them, you know, those things vary. It'd be fine to have a generalist represent you at meetings and then push issues back to your different arms as they needed technical expertise. You don't have to always commit a technical expert to show up at every meeting, so that eased their concern a little bit. So they're going to see. So then the other part was on IMS Global. We met with the lady that's running that effort on their credentials group that's kicking off soon here. They're going to kind of have three different interlocking efforts around the competency-based education, another initiative, I can't remember the exact name of it, and then one more focused directly on credentials. And I talked to her about how it's going to overlap with you, and you've talked to her. I'll pull her name up here. I think you know her.
Is it Lisa?
I think so. Hang on just a second here. It was just yesterday, and it was... How fast can I pull up the... it was... sorry, wrong meeting. Caselli, C-A-S-I-L-L-I, C. Caselli. Do you know her? I don't know what the first name is.
Carla?
Carla.
Yes. Carla Caselli. Yep.
Carla, there we go. Right.
Yep.
So anyway, she's leading it now. She's working with them. She was talking about some, I guess there's some changes going on at restructuring the Mozilla effort, which now spun out into... you know, the Badge Alliance, and I guess they're talking about restructuring that yet again.
Yep.
But in general, you know, she's inviting the right people. I don't know. You know, she lists us and kind of like a group of larger players like IBM, Pearson, ETS, others in the one group to try to work on explicating our, you know, what we want to see happen and the educational components of this. And I told her the need to coordinate it with you. You've talked to her, right? She mentioned she has talked with you. Is that right?
Yeah,
Manny?
Eric and I, and it's mainly Eric did a presentation to Carla, and I was on the call during that. I was back in the beginning of July 7th, I think. Yep, July 7th, 9th, sorry, we talked to her.
So they're going to kick off their calls and discussions soon. That was it. Go ahead.
Great. Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Richard, for the update. And that's fantastic news on Accenture. Okay. All right. So next topic up, we were going to have a short call today, but it is going to be probably a full call. Next topic up is, let's see, credentialing capabilities and the current proposal. Eric, sorry, you're on the queue. Go ahead. We do need to, Eric's asking in IRC, do we need to distinguish between identity and credentials? Is there one? Yes, there is a strong distinction that we make in the technical work between identity and credentials. And we also have been trying to be very careful about saying that we're not trying to solve the identity problem on the web. All we're trying to do is solve a smaller subset, which is how do you issue, store, and consume credentials. As many of the folks on the call know, you know, the consumption of those credentials are what effectively establish some kind of identity. So I think that has been the general position of the group for a while. Maybe we can try to make that a bit more clear in the blog post. Did that help, Eric? Yeah, W3C does kind of see it as the same. So we're going to have to make that point clear to them. The other pushback that we've gotten is they said they don't want to call it credentialing, they want to call it verifiable attributes, because they're concerned that credentialing is too generic of a term. I think verifiable attributes are even more generic, but you know.
Yeah, seems like the opposite direction to go.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, you know, we can bike shed the name. I think if this community comes forward and says, listen, we've talked about it at depth, and we've been hauling them credentials, and everyone seems to be pretty comfortable with it, and these are the experts, therefore, we should probably call it credentialing, right? Okay. So there's plenty of minus ones to verifiable attributes. So that's good. What I think we were expecting the group to push back with. Okay. Anyone else on the queue before we move on? I don't see anyone. The next step, John and Matt had. Oh, Eric's typing. While we're waiting, the next topic is something John Tibbetts just brought up, which is talking about the capabilities for this ecosystem, and then the current proposal. that the group's kind of putting forward, this authorization IO stuff and that kind of stuff. Login systems in the blog post are viewed by the browser manufacturers as credentialing systems. Some of them call them credentialing systems. Some of them call them, you know, lightweight identity systems. So I think that the credentials community group is the only group that has glossary, that has gone through the only standards group that I know of that has a glossary and has gone through the technical differences between login systems on the web, specific login systems on the web like OpenID Connect and Mozilla Persona, and distinguish them between credentialing systems like the Mozilla Open Badges and the Identity Credential Spec and those kinds of things. So in the blog post, we talk about anything that could be considered an identity or credentialing system when we rated these things against the capabilities, in order to cast a pretty wide net and catch things that people often bring up when we talk about credentialing systems. Like, you know, we start talking about a credentialing system, and somebody says, oh, that sounds exactly like OAuth. Even though it's completely different, it has nothing to do with it, we put it in the blog post because it does come up. Usually it's because the person that's suggesting that OAuth is a solution for credentialing doesn't quite understand the depth of the problem in what we're trying to get to. Okay, so I think that answered Eric's question. Okay, next topic up, credentialing capabilities and the current proposal. Before we get started, John, Matt, is there anything specifically that you're wanting to get out of this to hear?
I think if we just walk down the capability list and just, you know, a sentence or just a phrase that says, what about our proposal addresses this issue? And if so, how would you personally rate that on the chart that you have? I assume that it would be relatively high, but...
Yes, okay.
You say it.
And then Matt?
I'd kind of like to know, in addition to that, how... some level of certainty that we have about this spec. Is it well understood, or we still have a set of open issues that we're working through that need to be solved?
Okay. So I can for each one, then I can do what's our solution? How does it rate on the scale? And is there anything that we're unsure of, or any tweaks that need to be done with our proposed solution? That sound good?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So let's go ahead and get started. I am going to. There's the link in IRC, and it should take you straight to the credentialing ecosystem goals. The capabilities are below that, but a real quick thing on the goals. The goals are meant to be fairly high level. It's kind of our vision statement. The goals are from the vision statement that we have right now. And so the distinction that we're making, people have asked, you know, what's the difference between a goal and a capability and a feature, right? So goals are very high level. They're vision statement type stuff. Capabilities are things that we want the system to do, things that the system should do. So when you're talking about a credentialing ecosystem, that ecosystem should be able to do X, Y, and Z. Like, you should be able to issue a credential, you should be able to store a credential, you should be able to manage a credential. Those are capabilities. And then the last question we often get are, you know, what are features? Aren't capabilities features? And the answer to that is no. A feature is effectively a talking point around a piece of software, right? Features are things that software products have. You can talk about those features. Usually, you know, marketing folks can talk about those features. So today we're just going over the capabilities, which are the things that we want a credentialing ecosystem to have. Also keep in mind that this list of capabilities is probably not complete, and it probably needs to be refined. So the hope is that, you know, as we go through these and people raise issues and concerns with them, we will refine these capabilities, and they will eventually find their way into our capabilities document that this group's working on. Okay. Any questions before I proceed with the capabilities? All right. So I am going to drop another link into IRC. Here are the capabilities. Okay, so the extensible data model basically has to do with choosing a way of modeling the data that can allow arbitrary statements to be made. And this is kind of a fundamental aspect of the W3C's linked data semantic web movement. So the idea here is there are closed world systems and open world systems. The web is an open world system. Anybody can say anything about anybody else. And in order to be able to do that, you need to use a data model to do that. The fundamental data model at W3C for doing that is called the Resource Description Framework, so RDF, Resource Description Framework. It is incredibly flexible. It's been under development for 15 plus years. It's fairly well understood. There are certainly still, for lack of a better word, fights over what the right solution for the future of the web should be. And these tend to be, you know, academic versus practitioner fights. There are people that argue that XML, the XML tree-based model, is the best way. There are people that argue that the JSON key-value-based model is the best way. And there are people that argue that the RDF model is the best way. So we have, because we've chosen JSON-LD, we've tried to get the JSON practitioners and the linked data practitioners into our camp. Specifically, we're avoiding XML, mainly because of another point I'll get to. So the extensible data model that we're using is RDF, or that the proposal is on is RDF, it is going to be, and we have a number of reasons why we're using that. Specifically, you should be able to make, any organization or person should be able to make arbitrary claims about any other organization or person. Full stop. Any questions on capabilities or accessible data model?
Sounds good.
The next up is choice of syntax. So the data model is this abstract thing. It's concepts that are linked to other concepts. It's linked data. So, you know, this person knows this other person. This organization employs this person. This person has a plumbing license. This person has a high school transcript. That high school transcript has, you know, this piece of information, that other piece of information. So that's an abstract data model. We don't say how we actually express it to a computer. So the second capability is a choice of syntax. And what we're saying is that, you know, syntaxes come and go. Way back in the day, it was SGML, and then it was HTML, and then it was XML, and today it's JSON, and tomorrow who knows what it's going to be. Right. So if we're going to be smart about picking, something that is going to scale with the way the technology industry works, we should decouple the data model, which is RDF, from the actual syntax that expresses it. So today, we are basically saying that, you know, we're going to choose JSON-LD as a syntax for expression today. But let's say that JSON-LD goes out of favor by the year 2025. More than likely, the data model is not going to go out of favor then, because the data model is based on how humans express knowledge. It's the basically, you know, if you look at any language, Japanese or Mandarin or English or French, all of them follow the RDF data model. You know, there's a subject, there's a predicate, and there's an object. You know, your Jane likes cookies, right? That those are the types of statements that are expressed in RDF, or are capable of being expressed in RDF. It's a very flexible data model. So we are making the assumption here that JSON-LD is great today, but it will probably go out of favor in 10 years. And when it goes out of favor, the entire credentialing ecosystem shouldn't fall apart. It should use whatever the next best syntax is, you know, whatever ends up replacing JSON-LD. So this idea that we separate the data model from the way that we express that data model is fundamental. That, you know, we would rate very well on this because we have picked JSON-LD and we've picked the RDF data model. Any questions on choice of syntax?
All good for me.
Okay. Next up are decentralized vocabularies. Decentralized vocabularies have to do with separating what you... A vocabulary is effectively the language that you use to describe something. So if you think about credentials, the language that somebody in the pharmaceutical industry uses, the language that's important to a pharmacist or an accredited, you know, board, medical board, that language that they speak is very different from the language that, let's say, someone that's issuing a plumber's license or someone that's issuing a electronic transcript speaks. So the vocabulary, the terminology that they use is very different, and we should not require those industry verticals to come to a central location to work on the vocabulary. So each industry vertical should be able to develop their own vocabulary and deploy it independently of this group, the credentials group, or any official working group at W3C. And what this enables is it enables the ecosystem to innovate in parallel. And it also allows, it enables market verticals to be able to come up with their own solutions, talk about their industry, how they want to talk about it, and not how, for example, the W3C or the Internet Engineering Task Force or Google wants them to talk about their industry. So decentralized vocabularies are very important because it allows us to create this architecture, the us meaning the credentials group, to create this architecture. And then the people that actually issue the credentials can decide on what terminology and attributes are important to them, right? And they don't have to ask us permission to do that. And that may seem like something that is it's kind of like it seems like it's common sense. But when you look at the OpenID Connect specifications, in the specification itself, it says, this is how you express an address. This is how you express a first name. This is how you express, you know, information X, Y, and Z. And it's in the specification. So if any of us have, you know, let's talk about finance. If anybody in finance wanted to start talking about IBAN numbers or know your customer information insurance IDs, they would have to go to the Internet Engineering Task Force and lobby to have things added to that centralized vocabulary. Right, and that's just not this group has not for a long time felt that is a scalable proposition. Right, the Internet Engineering Task Force should absolutely not be in control, should not be in control of the way that the medical verticals or the education verticals or the pharmaceutical verticals issue and mark up their credentials. So that's it for decentralized vocabularies. Is that clear, or any questions on that?
Clear to me. I seem to be the only one saying that. If anybody disagrees, just let me know.
Okay. And I mean, you know, if all this feels like it's a fire hose of information, I mean, it is. I mean, these are capabilities that we've gotten to after – 4+ years of working on this stuff, so it's going to take a while for it to sink in if this is your first time seeing them. Clearly, we expect that the solution that we're proposing in this group would do well in the decentralized vocabularies bit, because that's exactly what we that's we depend on it for the core of the system. So that's why it was so easy for us to integrate and interoperate with the Mozilla Open Badges stuff, is because we took this open world assumption and the data model lines up nicely. So anyway, that's the reason it was so easy to for us to integrate with the Mozilla Open Badges stuff, is because of this design approach we took. Web-based PKI. This one might be a bit harder to grasp for those of you that are not familiar with security. I'll try to explain what it's about. Most public key infrastructure systems, and these are systems that were developed in the late 80s and 90s, depend on something called an X509 certificate. And that's basically your web browser depends on this stuff. If you see the little padlock icon, or if it says that you're in a secure connection, you're using this X509 certificate infrastructure. And the problem with that infrastructure, in the beginning, the infrastructure was fairly secure, meaning that it was very hard to issue these what are called root certificates to organizations, mainly like the U.S. government and some of the biggest internet companies had root certificates and nobody else did. But over time, that has grown to 280 organizations around the world that have root certificates and can issue credentials. And those quote unquote credentials, these certificates, are used to secure all of the secure traffic on the internet. Now the problem is that the U.S. government is capable of issuing credentials for any organization on the face of the planet, as is China or Pakistan or India. Right, and there are times when U.S. interests and China's interests are not aligned. For example, the NSA issues certificates for Chinese servers, and Chinese servers issue certificates for the Department of Defense and things of that nature. So when you're inside China, the certificate that you get is actually a Chinese certificate, and you're being redirected through a system that's snooping all your traffic and all that kind of stuff. Nation states do this all the time, right? So the other issue with this public key infrastructure system is that there has to be like a root of trust. You are not, in general, your organization has to depend on some other organization for who you can trust. So you have to trust the U.S. government and China at the same time if you're using a web browser, and that leads to the problem that I just outlined. A web-based PKI approach, which is the approach that we're taking for this solution we're proposing, does not require any pre-setup. It doesn't require you to have a big list of certificate authorities that you trust. So the organization can be much pickier about the organizations that they trust, and it also allows these documents to be verifiable in an ad hoc way. So to give you an example of how this web PKI system works, when you get a credential in this system, there's going to be an organization that signed that credential. There are actually going to be multiple signatures on that credential. One of them's from the recipient saying that they authorized the transmission to you. One of them's going to be on the issuer that issued the credential. There might be endorsers on the credential. There are going to be multiple digital signatures. And the traditional way that this worked is that the system that's consuming the credential, had to have had all of those certificates kind of pre-set up in your system. And that's difficult because the only organization it doesn't scale well, right? So what ends up happening there is this huge centralization of power where you just end up trusting Microsoft, Google, and Facebook signature, and you don't end up trusting any of the community colleges' signatures or anything along those nature, anything along those lines. With the web-based PKI system that we're proposing here, it kind of levels the playing field. Organizations can decide what other organizations that they're going to trust. All the information that you need to verify the credential, just verify the basics of the credential, are in the credential itself. So you don't have to do any kind of pre-setup between multiple organizations, and because you don't have to do any kind of pre-setup between multiple organizations, it scales much better to the scale of the web. So you can have very small issuers and very small credential consumers and very small and people. You can have people kind of claim keys and use them, and the infrastructure is much more scalable as a result. Why is this important? Scalability is one of the reasons it's important, and the other reason that it's important is because the OpenID Connect specifications and the Jose specifications don't have this feature. They're not ad hoc. You have to do key management. You have to set up keys before you receive messages from anyone, and they're not ad hoc in that manner. Matt has a question on this one.
So I'm a little new to this concept, I guess. So if I'm a consumer, does that mean I would see in this credential that just landed on my, on my web page or inbox or whatever, sort of a list of signed by company A, person B, endorser C, and that might be any, and then it's up to me to decide whether I trust company A, person B, and endorser C, or whether I should dig in further? Is that kind of the idea?
In general, that's the idea. Let me change a couple of your words. A credential consumer that receives it can make a decision on whether they trust all the signatures on that credential, and it's really up to them to decide. You know, they can still push that responsibility off to another organization, but it's more flexible this way. You have multiple ways of figuring out whether or not you want to trust the credential. So as a person receiving the credential, all of this is kind of hidden from you, right? I mean, if you got an electronic transcript and you're a high school student, you don't see any of this stuff. It's all the machine-to-machine communication behind the scenes that leverages it and checks whether or not it trusts the issuer of the credential, and it trusts the countersigner of the credential and all that kind of stuff. Did that help, Matt?
Not really, unfortunately.
No.
Let's say I'm a chief medical officer at a hospital, and I'm hiring a surgeon, and I want to see that they're actually board certified. So they send me their board certificate. Their credential, and I see that it's signed by FACOGS and by SGO and by their medical school, for example. Is that so each one of them would have signed and verified that credential?
Yeah. I mean, that's the idea. In the current issuing case, we don't have the current technology. Hasn't implemented that part of what we're talking about yet, but that is absolutely the idea. You can have multiple signatures on this from multiple issuing organizations. Did that help, or are we still miscommunicating?
Is the question actually about multiple signatures, or just about being able to look at a credential and see by whom it has been signed?
It's both, because I think I would want to know. If I saw a board certificate that was signed by a training organization I didn't recognize, then I would probably discount it. And then the second question is, if it says, signed by the University of Southern California, somewhere along the way, something has knows that it's actually USC and not someone posing as USC that signed that.
Right. So,
okay.
So the technology would actually do the verification of the signatures and present to you whether or not those signatures were valid and by whom they were signed. And then you as a person, you could look at those and make a decision as to whether or not you felt like the organizations that did the signatures should be trusted.
Got it. So if I'm USC, there's a process I have to go through to get my certificate that I can use to sign these credentials. And that's the root of the verification process.
Yes. In order to start issuing certificates, you use a piece of software that would allow you to generate the cryptographic pieces you need to start signing credentials that get pushed out. And so there's two parts to signing the credentials. You'll have a private part that stays with your software, and then a public part that's available on the web that other people can fetch, and they can actually use the location of that public key. You can actually bootstrap the existing CA system, the existing HTTPS web security system to find those keys. That has a lot to do with it being a web-based system.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, and I don't mean
to derail it. That sort of helps. Thanks.
Okay, good. And this is a fantastically deep topic. Let me suggest that we don't get into that discussion yet. We can talk about it on the call next week because we can easily take up an entire call just talking about the public key infrastructure bits of it. A lot of thought has gone into this over the last 4 years, so I believe there are answers to everyone's questions. It's just going to take a while to get through it. The other thing that I noticed that we're at the top of the hour, we might be able to talk about one more of these capabilities, but then we'll need to push the rest of the discussion off to next week. In general, the web-based PKI system that's being proposed here is more flexible than the current certificate system. It allows you to make many, many more claims on the keys and the certificates and all that kind of stuff, and it allows you to do ad hoc verification of the system. And we believe it's more secure than the current CA system. Because of the way it operates. It allows more flexibility. And because of that, we expect it to rate very highly on the capabilities comparison chart. We can do one more, and that's about choice of storage. Eric is asking about multilingual capability. Does JSON-LD do that natively? Yes, that's another capability that's just there in the data model, and we completely forgot to mention. So we are multilingual from day one. The data model is multilingual, and that has very important ramifications. You can effectively express the name of a credential in every language on the face of the planet and express that every language that has a BCP 47 code, which is a lot of them, and you can express that in the credential itself. So the credential would be able to be viewed by someone in Japan or the U.S. Or France, and it would show up in their native language. Same credential, but it would show up in their native language versus it being an English-only credential. Non-Unicode character. Let me add multilingual to the list, and we can discuss it later on. The next capability here is choice of storage. Choice of storage is effectively saying that you should be able to have an ecosystem where there is an issuer a storage facility for your credential and a consumer of your credential, and there should be a rich number of vendors for each one of those pieces in the ecosystem. So a choice of storage has to do with you can store your credential wherever you, the recipient, deems fit. So you can store it at Google if you want to. You can store it at Facebook. You can store it in a home server that you're running out of your house. You can store it on your wristwatch. These credentials should be portable. And it should be recipient controlled, meaning it's the recipient that's in charge of figuring out where to put their credentials, and no organization can stop them from moving their credentials from one location to another. This has a strong analog with cell phone number portability. So we want credential portability in the ecosystem. Any thoughts or comments on choice of storage? I expect us to do very well because the entire system is designed around this idea of credential portability. Okay. Was this helpful?
This is incredibly helpful, and I got to thank you, and I'll also thank the group for their patience for going through what may be obvious to many other people in the group, but this has been terrific.
I think it's been fantastic for me, too. Thank you.
Okay, great. And this is really the first time we've actually written down these capabilities. It's been tribal knowledge to this point, but you know, because of the W3C discussion, it's forced us to write this stuff down. So good. Glad it's helpful. And we'll continue this next week so that we can get through all of it.
So Eric and I are going to be at the IMS meeting next week, and I'm going to break away for this call if I can. But if not, I assume I can get recordings and stuff like that.
Yeah, all the audio will be available. So
terrific.
We'll,
thanks again.
Okay. All right. That's it for the call today. Does anyone have anything else that we should be aware of over the next week before the call next Tuesday?
No, just let's have a chat before I do the use case stuff, you said.
Okay. All right. All right. Sounds good. Thanks, everyone, for the call, and we will talk again next Tuesday, same time. Have a great week. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.